It's time for Windows Weekly. The fall update is here. Well, tomorrow it's coming. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley will give you a preview. They'll talk about what's up with Windows Mobile. In fact, we think we know when the 950 will come out. All of that and a lot more. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 439, recorded Wednesday, November 11th, 2015. Is that Windows NT in your pocket? Windows Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. Looking to set up payments for your business? Braintree gives your app or website a payment solution that accepts just about every form of payment with one simple integration. Plus, Braintree will give you the first $50,000 in transactions fee-free. To learn more, visit BraintreePayments.com/Windows. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service that is the most sophisticated way for you to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/Windows to sign up and get your free, personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/Windows. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about Windows and Microsoft and Xbox. And Paul Thurrott is here and Mary Jo Foley is here. Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft at allaboutmicrosoft.com, the ZDNet blog. Paul Thurrott's at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com.
True.
And here we are. Paul, before we get started.
Yes. Yeah.
What the hell did Microsoft do to my Xbox? Mm. So I downloaded the... Oh, first of all, I'm ready to play Fallout 4. But then it says, no, you need to download a 3.8 gigabyte update to the Xbox.
Oh, because you're on the preview.
Is that it? Because it turned everything sideways.
Yeah. That's the preview. That's the new experience.
I don't feel like the new experience is in any way improvement of the old experience, except it's turned sideways.
Well, you know, actually, the coolest thing about it to me is, you know, if you use it a lot, you know that you can use the bumpers to go left, right.
Yes. In Xbox, I figured right? that out. I watched a little video.
So with the new experience, you can go up and down using the
right.
triggers.
Right.
So once you kind of figure that out, you really are kind of getting more information on each screen. Because before it was just like a gigantic panorama that didn't really extend beyond the height of the screen. But now it goes in both directions.
Well,
by the way, it was Portable Media Center circa 2004 or something. I mean, they had this UI a long time ago.
Then Fallout 4.
Yes. I'm sure that was a small install.
So I thought I pre-ordered it a couple of weeks ago, all excited. I mm-hmm. thought it was already downloading, you know, because it's downloading. Mm. I launch it. It goes, please stand by, and then it goes away. Oh, no, wait a minute. Today's the day. Please stand by, then it goes away. So obviously the best thing to do, go online and see why that's happening. And they say, oh, yeah. That's a bug. You got to delete. It only downloaded 128 megabytes stub.
Okay.
By the way, that's a lot of megabytes for. Please stand by. Go away. 128 megabytes stub. You now need to delete that and reinstall 28 gigabytes.
So if it helps, it doesn't. Not the biggest install on Xbox One.
What? There's something bigger?
Yeah. Well, it was because it's so many games. I think the Halo Master Chief Collection was... Yeah. 40-something gigs,
lucky,
I think.
Luckily, I have a 3-terabyte drive on my Xbox, so it's all right. But I was sad because I couldn't. I said, well, I guess I'll see you tomorrow then, Fallout 4. Yeah. And I'm a little groggy because I did. It's fun. All right. Sorry, Mary Jo. I wanted to get that in before we really talked about anything important.
Before we jumped right into enterprise stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Windows 10 rumbles forward, the headline reads, to version 1511.
Right.
Is this threshold 2? Are we here?
Yeah. This is it.
The fall update is here.
Yeah. Yes. The rumors all have it hitting tomorrow, which makes sense because tomorrow is the Xbox One update.
Well, also makes sense because yesterday was Patch Tuesday, and you probably wouldn't want to piggyback all of those things at once, would you?
That was the rumor at one point, though, was it was going to come on Patch Tuesday because it was just another update.
Because it is an update, yeah. Well, it's just another update in the sense that the Xbox One New Experience is just another update. I mean, it's actually pretty big.
It's a fall. Okay. It's the fall update.
Yeah.
Ladies, the fall season is here.
Yep.
It's time to update your look.
Sure. A little bit of Edge, a little bit of Cortana, a little bit of Enterprise.
Yeah, baby. So we think we'll get it tomorrow, so allow some time for the update. How big is it?
You know what? That's a good question because I'm not entirely sure. You know, we've been getting builds as part of Windows Insider. My understanding of the install process, based on that stuff, you know, remember we were doing the show a couple of weeks ago and I got some documentation about this. And it said that it would be delivered as a Windows update, which is not how... Well, actually, the builds have come through Windows Update, but you know, the builds are really like monolithic things. You know, these giant ISO-sized things. I don't know that they're delivering it that way. I mean, you'll still have to reboot. You'll still have that circle progress bar. It still will probably take 15 or 20 minutes. You know, it's not going to be an hour, but I'm not really sure how big the whole download is.
It is 15. It is 1511 is 10.586 though.
It is.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah.
So those of you on the early ring or whatever, the fast ring, already have it.
Right. They got it last week.
That's the one that's blue screening my Dell, by the way.
Yay. No. Right. That was the fast ring preview that went out last Thursday. That had, again, mostly fixes, a few, like, fixes to the tab previews and Edge. Some random blue screen fixes for smaller form factor devices. So we knew it was pretty close. And then sources started saying to us, that is threshold two. Right, that's it. Right.
And then the slow ring got it.
Yeah, slow ring got it. Yeah.
And right, I think that's a great indication. I think it's all happening. I think this is, I think we're here. Yeah.
It's all happening.
It's full of stars.
It's full of stars.
Actually, what it's full of, Leo,
is full of goodness.
Well, you know, it's funny. I sort of equate it to Windows 98 SE, right? Although actually that had a couple of major new features. There are no major new features. You know, there's no big bang, whatever, but there are hundreds of little things, lots of app updates, you know, improvements to Edge, which I think are really important to Cortana. It's really not, as far as end users go anyway, I mean, it's really not about, oh, look, you know, there's new Skype apps, you know, the new universal Skype apps. But nothing, you know, nothing dramatic. I mean, in fact, I think if you're just running Windows 8, the normal version, and you upgrade to this, you might not notice that anything changed right away. Because there's nothing, right? What's that?
You said 8, but you mean 10,
he means
right?
10.
He's
in a fugue state right now.
Yep.
Yes.
This is the same. He's just reusing this thing he said for Windows 7 update.
Yeah. Actually, I went back and found the show notes from when Windows 8 went to Windows 8.1 and I just started using
it. Like, let's just say that again.
It's very similar.
Started using that. Yeah. It's,
no, but you've
I'm
been
a writer.
Using,
I'm efficient.
Yeah, right. You've been using, what is this, 565? 586. You've been using that for a week, right?
Yeah.
As have I.
I have not.
Yes. Right.
So I switched phones in my office and I'm trying to. Okay, I'm just going to leave it alone.
Just let it go.
I was going to turn off the ringer.
Let it ring. Let it ring.
I'll just turn it. Okay.
Oh, sorry. The weather outside is frightful. Okay. I think we've already kind of covered what's going to happen here, right? We've talked about Edge not really getting plugins or anything.
Right.
Right.
No extensions yet for Edge. We know that that's coming next year. But I still am hearing that if you're on the fast ring, that you're probably going to see a preview of those before the end of this year.
It would make such a huge difference, you know.
It would, actually. It might even make me go to the preview.
Yeah.
I really want to use Edge, you know. I really do. I love the way it renders text. It's a nice-looking browser, whatever, but it's fast. Yeah. It looks great. doesn't do ad blocking. You know, it doesn't have a couple of things. So, and the fact that they're going to let you use Google Chrome extensions is really helpful because
that's actually
the browser I use now. And there's so many great extensions I can just bring over the ones that I want.
That's awesome.
So does anything have to happen to those extensions for it to work with Edge, or can you just use them?
It's not clear. Yeah. In other words, right. Will there be some sort of compatibility list or something?
Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I'm wondering that too. People have asked me too, you know, are developers going to have to do something, or users, anybody going to have to have like this interim step to take the extension for Edge and plug it into, from Chrome to Edge.
Right.
Who knows? We don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah. The other thing that happened right after Windows Weekly last week was Microsoft started rolling out a preview of the Windows Store for Business to insiders who wanted to check that out. So that's the store that's a portal for people who have internal apps or store apps that they want to make sure everybody in their organization gets on a PC. It's like a separate store for business customers. And that's now in preview too. And we had heard back in June, I think it was, that this might be something associated with Threshold 2 also. So now that's in preview as of last week.
Cool.
Yeah, all the pieces are coming together.
It's all coming
clearly together. What we need to do is move on to the next release, which I think is called Redstone.
It is.
Because this is boring now.
Right. Now you want leaks on Redstone, right?
Right. What have you done for us lately, Microsoft?
I see this comprehensive list of what's new in the fall update, but we don't want to run through this. We should probably refer people.
It's mostly minor stuff. There's, color additions to the UI and, it's not. That's what I mean. I mean, there's no, big bang. If you're, as an individual, if you're going to install this thing where I can say, oh, you got to get it. Well, you're going to get it anyway. It's not like you have a choice, but. Here's the thing. Here's why. It's really not like that.
That's a little disappointing, though, isn't it? I mean,
well, I think that speaks to how mature Windows 10 really was at the time it was released. And that, a lot of people, and I've said this too, have pointed to this release as sort of what Microsoft intended to release as the original Windows 10, when they had that October ship date in mind. And I think there's some validity to that. So, the things that they dropped off in order to make July were earth-shattering, right? They were just fit-and-finish type things. And I'm sure they've made improvements based on feedback and so forth. So I suspect going forward, I don't know that we're going to see one every quarter, if it's three times a year, twice a year, however it works. But obviously there's going to be some sort of cadence for updates. And I think some of them will have big things, and some of them will be more cumulative, iteration kind of stuff. And I think this just is all about that latter thing. It was already all there. I mean, Windows 10 is the big thing, right? Tablet mode, Continuum, right, Windows Hello, all that stuff. So this time we're just, we're fine-tuning. It's so okay.
You'll be like the frog in the boiling water. One day you'll just wake up and Windows 10 will be all new and different.
And be being eaten.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, my legs. Sacre bleu.
Yep.
All right.
That is actually going to be interesting for people who are on the RTM build like me, but who haven't been following along with all the things that have been over the last few months. Will they notice? Like, are they going to be like, oh?
I think what you might notice is just the process, right? Because you may turn on your computer and it's going through that update cycle.
Yeah.
Is it build, though, as the, in some way different, or does it just look like another update?
It's supposed to not look like something different.
Yeah, I think Microsoft doesn't mind if people go,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even know they updated.
I mean, let's put this in perspective. This is a free update to a free operating system. Right. So, they're not under any onus to deliver something awesome. I mean, I do think what they're doing is important and is good.
Yeah, but even more to the point, they don't want people to go, oh, no. They want people just to continue to use it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't change everything again. It's like, yeah, we tried tablet mode in the last build. Now we're going to go back to the way it was in Windows 8. Sorry about that. It's not. They can't do that. It's Windows 10.
Right. The whole thing about it's a service. Right. It's supposed to be a continuous service where you don't have these major interruptions or have, especially business customers going, "Whoa, I don't want that. I don't want that update." Right. It's got too much weirdness. Too many new things I haven't tried. I mean, there still will be businesses who say, "I don't want this yet. I need to test it," but. the idea is to make it smooth.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's appropriate. I think that's mm-hmm. exactly what they want. Yeah. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
I agree.
So the eyes have it.
Yep.
Yes. Windows 10 Store for Business.
Yep. That came out as a preview last week. If you are a business customer and you want to try that out, you can if you're on the Insider's preview. Like we said, just kind of it's more geared for companies who want to have specific apps made available to people in their organization. So it can be line of business apps, store apps, and you want to have a certain set of apps just for your own employees. That's when you would use the business store.
Okay. Microsoft has put up a sway to help you understand what you're getting.
Great. This is actually a nice sway. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes, but it's a sway Microsoft made. It has a bunch of different Windows 10 links in here that are all in one place, which is kind of nice. So all the links they have on different parts of security for Windows 10, credential guard, device guard, passport. They have a section on deployment and management and productivity, and the section about the devices, stuff for developers. It's just nice to have all of this in one place. And a lot of these links are very good. They're not just marketing links. They have some in-depth information here.
This is kind of a cool way to do it, because it is a website, right? I mean, if you mm-hmm. if you go to it, it works fine in your browser as a website.
Yep.
But it's also a sway.
Right. I also tweeted a link to this morning. So if you want it right away, go look for my tweet. It's just a hard address to.
Yeah, it's long. It's a long number. They should have done a short.
I know. Yeah.
URL for this one.
They should have. Why they didn't. Yeah.
But this is kind of an interesting way to do this, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. I think that's a. It's it shows off Sway at the same time as it actually is a pretty. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good way to demonstrate that stuff.
Of course, my Twitter followers would probably call it propaganda.
But it's not. That's right. That's the point, right? It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's been kind of hard to find some of the resources on Windows 10. Like if you're looking for deployment or everything that we know about, Credential Manager. It's mm-hmm. it's just nice to have it one place, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree. One of the things that's interesting, before the show, I went to the Apple Store to pick up the new giant iPad Pro. It's a giant. And I've been setting it up. And one of the things they even tout in the Apple literature is Office 365.
Nice.
That's a big part of
the pitch. That's how they go legit,
On something like this, you probably do want to kind of it's poised as a productivity device. They sell it's just like, it's a Surface with iOS on it, basically. And no loop.
And we had that before. We called it Surface RT.
Yeah. Oh, ow! Burn.
Oh, no. Actually, Surface RT was more powerful. It had a desktop, too. Sorry, my mistake.
Sorry. That's exactly what was wrong with it. You don't need a desktop.
No, I know. Actually, what was wrong with it was that there were no apps. Right. And so, when people compare the iPad Pro to Surface, the one thing you got to give Apple credit for is this thing exists in an ecosystem of, a billion apps or something, some crazy number. It's no problem with the apps. Multitasking, file system access, we'll see.
Yep.
But apps, no problem.
All righty. Let's take a break. Come back with a little bit more. Paul Thrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about the latest from Microsoft. When we return, let's talk more about the Xbox Love out live. Xbox
and the Xbox Love.
Xbox One new experience. I didn't realize it goes live tomorrow. So I got it early is what it is. I get.
Yeah. If you're on the preview, yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's I am. I get. Apparently I still am. Our show today brought to you by Braintree. If you're a mobile app developer or if you actually do mobile or websites, even desktop. In fact, I don't know if people know this. I didn't know this at first. Braintree, which is famous for its mobile payment system, its e-commerce system that you can easily embed in your mobile app, started with as a web e-commerce system. But now they coded it specifically for mobile. It's incredible. And you know, if you're working on the next, you know, big thing, the next Uber or Airbnb or GitHub, you probably should use the same payment solution they use. That's right. Uber uses Braintree. That means if you've ever used an Uber, you've used Braintree. If you ever used GitHub, I'm sure you have, you've used Braintree. Lyft, Hotels Tonight, and Airbnb. It's so great when you see competitors using the same solution. You know this is something that works. They make mobile payments fast, easy, and seamless. It's what your users want. They want to be able to pay with Apple Pay and Android Pay and credit cards and PayPal and Venmo and even Bitcoin. And you get it all. And when a new payment method comes out, you go to your control panel, you check a box. You don't have to add any code. You got it. It's just so great. Braintree's fast payouts are big for you. Continuous support means you're always going to be ready. From your first dollar to your billionth, they'll be there right with you. And it solves the problem of abandoned mobile carts. Big problem. They estimate 70% of all mobile carts are abandoned before the buy button is hit. Don't have to worry about that with Braintree. They have their V.0 SDK. There's no buy button in Uber. It's just, it happens automatic. Have you used the buyable pins in Pinterest? You know, isn't that, those pins are, you know, everywhere. You click a button, boom. That's Braintree. A full stack payment solution. Best-in-class mobile checkout experience, support for all payment types, easy for you, as few as 10 lines of code. They could even do it for you if you're too busy. I want you to check it out. And by the way, your first $50,000 in payments are fee-free at braintreepayments.com/windows. braintreepayments.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. And it shows you there's a lot of developers listening to the show because, of course, Braintree wants to go where the developers are. Our next ad is Wealthfront, which is for rich people, so same thing. and then the third ad is ZipRecruiter for people who need a job. So it covers the waterfront.
It does.
I'm just teasing you. I'm excited because when I bought Fallout 4, it said I get a license to the Fallout 3 on Xbox 360. Now I'm doubly excited because can I play that on my Xbox One, Paul Thurrott?
I don't know.
Oh, there is a list. I should have looked.
There is a list.
A list of all the games that that work.
So I don't know if you saw my just now addition to the notes, but there's also now a comedy video from Microsoft about how backwards compatibility came to be.
Oh, really? Should we watch that?
Yeah.
All right.
It's 53 seconds long. It stars Martin Starr, who was the guy on Silicon Valley and Freaks and Geeks, I guess. I don't think I've ever seen
that. I love this guy. He's my favorite guy on Silicon Valley. He's the dry programmer. Here, let's play it.
Bit of a deadpan.
Yeah.
As profoundly underrated actor Martin Starr, people always think I'm being sarcastic. I bet I just blew your mind. I've got good news for you. I had an epiphany this morning. Xbox One backward compatibility is now reality. Yep. I just finished a, dare I say, stunning redesign of the Xbox One experience. I just made that happen. Now you can play your Xbox One games on any Windows 10 PC connected to Wi-Fi. I did it for you. And now it's here. And it's stunning. I should get some energy drinks. That's beside the point. Sorry, I'm having camera problems. I made Mass Effect, Borderlands, this game for you. That's nice out here. Anyway, now if you'll excuse me. This isn't sarcasm. You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome.
I don't even get it, and I like it. I don't even... Is the premise of this that he's pretending he may... I don't get it, but I don't care because I love him, so it doesn't matter. Do you get it, Mary Jo?
I think the premise is he's Microsoft. Like, they've done this thing for you.
Exactly.
He is Microsoft. But he's not sarcastic.
You don't get a lot of credit for this, but...
I did it.
We've just enabled you to keep playing this library of games you bought, you know, 10 years ago.
Actually, really, I think that that's better than Jerry Seinfeld in a churro. I just want to say.
Yes.
I still feel that was an underrated ad campaign.
Do you really? Come on.
I enjoyed it.
Did you like the PC What campaign, too?
Oh, God.
That was ridiculous.
Okay. PC does what?
No,
it does grow on you. In the sense that you start using it in other contexts.
Oh, God. This one is
good for a lad. It's like, what's that? You can use it. We'll be using it for years. iPad Pro does what? Here is the list, thanks to Microsoft, of all the games.
This is at launch, right? So in other words, tomorrow, over 100 games, I think it's 104 games, will be compatible with the Xbox One, Xbox 360 games. All right. And then going forward, of course, they're going to add more and more.
So I
was really hoping to see Call of Duty in that list, but I'm not surprised. No.
I am here with Bill Stillwell from the Xbox platform team.
This is Major Nelson.
I am really excited about
it. He's getting a lot of exposure now, by the way, on the Xbox
Major Nelson is.
Major Nelson. He's got like his own show now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's an interesting choice because he's
yep.
Middle-aged guy, frankly.
I know.
He's not what
he was when he started. Yeah, I know. Yeah. No, he's but you know what? He's done his thing.
And I love Larry Herb. But
can't begrudge him.
And I guess he's credible among gamers because he's been around for so long.
Absolutely. He's been around forever.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, look at him. No, I'm just kidding. But
it's a little bit like having Stuart Chaffé. Hi, I'm Stuart Chaffé for Xbox 3. It's like,
It's like, really?
Yeah. Really?
That's what like the guy, like, on. You know, the, was it Orson, not Orson Welles, the guy, like, we'll sell no wine before it's time. Who was that? Was that Orson Welles?
It was Orson Welles.
It's like having that guy, you know. Before he's got rings time. On all his fingers.
Halo Reach, Halo Wars, Skate 3, Tony Hawk's Skate 3. Or no, that's not Tony Hawk. That's the other guy. BioShock, I love that, but not and BioShock 2 and BioShock Infinite, which actually is a superior game.
Oh, it says Call of Duty Black Ops. So
Wait a minute, sorry. This is on the way.
No, but that's okay. That means it's coming.
Starting November 12th.
As long as it's coming, that's fine.
Yeah, Black Ops is coming.
I didn't think Call of Duty would ever appear on this list.
Fallout
so that's
3.
Great.
So I have a license code for Fallout 3 on the Xbox
360. But you got that. If you bought Fallout 4, you get that automatically.
So how do I do this now? What's the...
So, it's off the top of my head. I'm going to get the names wrong. But what you do is you go to your game and app list.
Yeah.
And look at games.
Yeah.
And then you go over to the right, because the initial view is what you've got installed in your console. It's in tiles. And you go over to the right, and I think it's, I can't remember what it's called. It's like your full game list or whatever it is. Smaller tiles, but it's all of your games. And all of the Xbox 360 games that are compatible with the Xbox One will be in that list.
Yeah.
And so you just go find it in there.
Oh.
And then you install it as you would an Xbox One game.
Oh, good. Yeah, because they gave me a license key. I got a message that says, here's your license key for
Fallout so in that 3. Case, you may, so you must have to redeem it. Yeah. So that's actually a different process.
Okay,
then.
Redeem so, and then download.
And then it will show that will trigger the install. Yeah.
Some Assassin's Creed 2. Banjo-Tooie. I'm so happy about that. Just looking at
there are some good ones. I mean, Borderlands is in there. Good. Gears of War 3.
You know, Borderlands,
Assassin's Creed 2.
3,
Just Cause
Mirror's
2.
Edge, Mass Effect.
And don't forget, you know, it's not just Fallout. You know, the Halo game. No, not the Halo
Kingdom
game. I'm sorry.
For Kelflings.
Gears of War's game. You know, you get the older Gears of Wars games.
Alien
the
Hominid
new Rainbow
2.
Six game.
Yeah.
You get the old Rainbow Six games as well.
Yeah. Beyond Good and Evil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Centipede.
Condemned. I believe that's a launch title. That was a great game. It's like a solving a serial killer kind of thing.
Okay. Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, it goes back.
Crazy.
That's like 9 years old.
Yeah, there's some old stuff. You know what my son would love, but I think it was not an Xbox 360. It was an Xbox game.
What's that?
Stranger's Wrath, one of the Oddworld.
Jeez, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, no, it's really old.
So there's no promises, but they're sort of talking about, you know, we could do that too. You
Xbox,
never know. I don't know that this...
Because this is an emulator, right? Running in Hadoop?
Virtual machine running in Hyper-V.
Hyper-V. I knew it was one of them.
Almost as good as Hadoop.
Almost as good as Hadoop.
Almost, yeah.
How does it run? Pretty well, do you know? How does it run?
It's an emulation technology, right?
Does it run well?
I mean, I hate to use the phrase, it's an Xbox 360 and your Xbox One, but it really is. And what I mean by that is, you're running the Xbox 360 in a virtual machine. And so when you do things like bring up the Xbox guide, it's the Xbox 360 version. If you get a notification while in the game, it's the Xbox 360 version. So even though you're on the Xbox One, it's an Xbox 360. They're not putting in little shivs or whatever. You know, am I using the right term? You know, to make
shims.
That thing work.
Shivs are prison knives made out of plastic spoons.
I don't know why my mind goes to violence. Twitter. That's why. It really is. You're bringing up the Xbox 360 when you run it, and so the initial load time is a little slower because you got to boot the thing up. But when you're playing the game, it's absolutely full speed.
Nice.
Yeah, 100%.
Nice.
It's really good.
Oh, and We should probably bring up is not everything is there when the new experience launches, right? Like we've talked about, Cortana is not really there
it's
yet.
It's not there at all. Yeah, no, that's right.
At all. And right. I guess the unified store won't actually be populated with apps that are common to Windows 10.
It won't
10.
Be there. That's not changing at all. So it's right. Yeah. They're doing Windows 10 in stages. It makes sense that this first release would be the underpinnings. It would be the new version mm-hmm. of Hyper-V that enables this backwards compatibility stuff. And then they're going to, yeah, I think Cortana's next after that, and then the unified store. Over time. They'll get time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool they're starting with the, you know, the game stuff.
Yeah. It's great. You know, and as I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not thrilled by the new UI, but I guess I'll get used to it. It won't matter. It just feels like they change for change's sake. I'm not sure how it's an improvement. And it does. And now I'm used to how to find everything and everything works, and now they've turned it on its side.
So,
literally.
You know what? I thought that originally, too, but the more I use it, the more I sort of understand why they did what they did. I'd almost have to bring this up to talk intelligently about this. But, you know, I am not a social gamer. You know, I don't get on and it's like, hey, buddy, are you there? Let's go play Call of Duty right. together. I get in myself. I go, I kill people. I get out.
Right.
But I'm not. I'm not
watching the videos that you.
Yeah. But I'm not normal like that way. And so, but I'm also, you know, I'm a big ham-handed guy. And so I'll be like plowing away on the controller and I'll hit that Xbox guide button, the Xbox button by mistake all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, Xbox 360, Xbox One before this release, what that does is it brings up what's called the Xbox guide. It's this thing that kind of comes up in front of everything else. And it slows the whole console down to a halt. It was one of the really disappointing things about the Xbox One when it first launched, that experience was not better, because that used to happen to me all the time on the Xbox 360. And I think part of the reason is it was a physically rounded button, so you could easily hit it with your fingers. And, you know, come on. You know, we want to get back in the game. And so, all right, so there's me. I'm ham-handed. But I think for most people, when they're playing games, there's this set of things that people want to do that has nothing to do with the game they're actually playing. They want to talk to their friends. They want to invite their friends to a game party. They just got a notification. They want to go see what it was in a moment where they have a second free or whatever. And so the Xbox guide that is now in the new Xbox One experience is an overlay that appears over part of the screen. It no longer has to shrink the whole thing down like it did on the original release of Xbox One. It used to really slow things down. And it doesn't come up, you know, like instantaneously, but it comes up like a lot faster than it did before. And, you know, I'm just looking at it now. I mean, it has like a friends list. It's got the party stuff. It's got your messages. I just made it go away. It has notifications and then settings. It's got a couple of quick settings or whatever. And then it also has the interface for Snap. And so you can still do shortcuts to get to Snap, but Snap is now right here in this menu. And so what it's become is sort of like a right-click context menu. It's like, what else might you want to do? And usually with someone else. And I think that actually is very successful. And I say that knowing I'm never actually going to use this thing on purpose, because that's not the way I do things. But, you know, I'm not the average Xbox gamer. So I know what you're saying. My initial reaction on the UI change was like, well, I used to go to my pins all the time. And that was over from the left, over to the left from home. And I knew exactly how to get there really quickly. And it was like, why? Okay, they changed that. I don't like that. But actually, when you know that you can use the triggers to get up and down really quickly, instead of like saying left bumper one time to go left, now you do right clicker one time to go down. It's the same amount of steps and you're right there. And so you do have to learn where things are a little bit in some cases like this one. But I think overall it's a really successful UI change. It has been 2 years too.
Yeah. Well, but that doesn't mean you need to change the UI. I mean, look at the iPhone.
No, but it's 2 years of learning how people do things. Right. You know, Microsoft's so big on telemetry. This is one of the things that's supposedly like a privacy problem in Windows 10.
Right.
They look at what people do, and I think what they're seeing is people are misclicking all the time to get to these things, or they're clicking too many times to start something. Like in the original version of Xbox One, and again, I don't do this a lot, but to get to your friends list, to invite them to join a party so you guys can play a game together, went from X number of clicks or button presses in Xbox 360 to X times 2 number of taps on Xbox One. And a lot of people were like, this is way too many steps. You know, I don't want to get out of the game I'm playing. I want to communicate with someone real quick and get going again. And now they're kind of enabling that you know, in the new update.
Good. I will, you know, I'll give it a shot. I'll bear with it for a little longer. And maybe I'll get used to it. I see the, I love the pop-in thing. What is, which button you press for that? The left bar.
Sorry, which one? You do double tap on the Xbox.
Double tap. That's it, on the home button.
Yep.
Yeah, or the Xbox button.
Yeah, and actually, then, you know, if you tap once, you go home, right? And so, right. I'm trying to imagine. Like, I really don't double tap by mistake.
Yeah. But and it's also, as you mentioned, context sensitive. So if you're in a game and you double tap.
Well, no, it's always the guide. So you always get that. It's the guide.
But yeah, but it will. It looks like it will offer. Do you want to? Oh, did you want to record what just happened? Or do you, I mean, in other words, it gives you, it seems like it suggests.
No, that's a different thing.
That's this the is thing just that
the guide is universal from the left. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For example, you were talking about like UI change for UI change sake, right? Snap debuted, I know, a year ago or something, or maybe it was right at the beginning. Right. I don't remember, but Snap always came in from the right side of the screen.
Right.
So when they did this overlay on the left, they were like, well, we'll put Snap over there because now overlays are on the left, and everybody complained. And so actually when Snap comes in, it goes back to the right now, which is the way it always was. And again, they didn't, they did originally just change it. But then so many people said, you know, we really like the way it works. Like, we're used to this. So when you do Snap, even though you can see the interface for Snap on the left, when Snap actually occurs, the Snapped app is on the right as it was, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago or whatever.
Right.
So they're not, you know, they're not just like in an ivory tower making changes for the heck of it.
Yeah.
You know?
I just, you know, the problem partly is that mostly I use it as a TV thing.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly I use it as a front end for Call of Duty.
Yeah. So it's great if you're using it as a front end for Call of Duty. Works great. For me,
all
it's
these
like
extra buttons
my TV,
are super,
my, the,
super
the stuff, the channels were on the left, now they're on the bottom. I did, once I learned the right trigger, which pops you down there, now it's actually just as easy. So you're right. But you do have to learn the right trigger. Microsoft seems to really like hidden... less discoverable controls. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes. I mean, they tend to overload things. But I think that plays to the mentality of a gamer. I mean, the average Xbox controller probably has 117 buttons on it.
Yeah.
You got to do, you know, button combos, you know, dating back to like, you know, Mortal Kombat 3 or something. I think this just rewards people who care and want to... learn all that stuff. No, I mean, you know, you want
to... It's hard to use, but that rewards people who care. Care enough.
The food comes out of the little plastic tunnel when you do the right thing. It's, you know, it's what you want.
One other thing, and maybe I did something stupid, because I wanted to use the streaming on my Surface Book from my Xbox One.
Yep.
And it says, oh, you got to hook up a controller. So I went online.
Okay. Well, actually, you don't.
Oh, you don't?
No, so this is actually very complicated.
That,
well, you do need, I should say, you do need to connect a controller.
Right.
But what the error message doesn't tell you, or maybe it does, I don't remember how they word it, but that controller could be connected to anything. It could be connected to your Xbox One.
Oh.
Or it could be connected to your Windows 10 device.
I wish I
had. So, in other words, when I first started testing this, I thought, well, obviously, what I need to do is buy a second controller because I have to connect
it
to the Windows computer.
That's exactly what I thought.
And then because the wireless control adapter wasn't out yet, I have to get a cable or get a controller that comes with a cable.
Yep.
And so you connect it. But actually, if you were sitting here playing on your Xbox One and you said, I'm going to go in the other room now and I play off the tablet.
Yeah.
And you turn the screen off, but you left the Xbox One on and you went in the other room and tried to play it with a second controller.
Yeah.
It actually wouldn't work.
Oh.
Because the first controller is still connected to the console.
Okay.
So that raises
all I mean
an
is
interesting...
some controller.
Yeah, like if you're if the Xbox isn't playing a game and no controller is attached,
right?
You could go out in the other room with your computer, tablet, Surface, whatever, and connect a controller, however you choose to do it,
right?
And start it up. It'll work fine. But interestingly, the other thing you could do is take the controller from your Xbox, turn it on. It's connected to the Xbox. Walk in the other room. As long as you're not too far away, you are actually playing with the controller to the Xbox because the game's really playing on the Xbox anyway. So in that case, all you're really doing is just putting the screen
right
to the computer and the sound. You know?
Right.
And that works fine.
Okay.
There's no, you can do that too.
Well, so
yes, you don't actually need a second controller.
What I did, well, I figure I have, you know, I think I have two, maybe three Xbox controllers. So I said, I don't need to buy a new Xbox controller, but I need to buy the USB cable that allows me to hook my Xbox controller up to my PC, right?
Yes.
Sorry, well, Mary Jo. We're almost done.
I did.
Don't worry,
I'm
answering tweets.
I did this.
The cable's 50 freaking bucks.
Oh, I see what he's saying.
Did I do something wrong?
No, because I did the same thing. But then I realized...
Why is the cable 50 freaking bucks?
Well, you can buy a... You know, they sell something called the Xbox One controller for Windows, and that comes with a USB cable.
Yeah, that's 60 freaking bucks.
Yeah. So if you have an Xbox One controller, it's just a normal USB cable. You could plug a cable into it. Now, the problem is...
Why is Microsoft selling the cable for $47.88?
Actually, if you zoom in on that image, you can find out why, because it has a little white light on it.
Oh.
And it's pretty.
That's what I'm getting? You mean
it's pretty.
I could have used any micro USB cable and it would have...
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
son of a... I just bought a $50 light USB cable.
Yeah, it's a... You could use this cable to charge your phone.
Son of a...
I know.
Is that...
I
I thought maybe Amazon is scalping?
Well...
Or is that what Microsoft charges for it?
No, that's the... just
the controller and cable is $80. The cable is $47.88.
It can't just be the cable. It's got to be the controller with the cable.
Well, we'll see when it comes in a box.
Well, if it comes just the cable, send it back.
No kidding.
That's crazy.
I thought I had to have it. I thought it was...
It does say cable for Windows, doesn't it?
It says cable 47. So I thought, it's a special proprietary cable.
Ew. Nope. It's a... That's just a USB cable. That's a micro USB cable. I know. Sorry, Leo. Someone mentioned on Twitter, and you are right. If you double tap the Xbox button to bring up the Xbox guide.
I know.
It does have options on the screen. Press Y to save a screenshot. Plus X to record that.
I didn't want to.
I don't really notice that because I'm screaming at my Xbox to record that when I do something awesome.
Yeah.
Which actually I think would make my clips better. If you could hear me frantically telling this thing, please, dear God, listen to me. You know.
What's this?
That's the wireless adapter. So Xbox One controllers. That's what I mean. I think the $47 one is the controller with a cable.
Oh, and that's probably
the $79 one is the controller with a battery.
I get it. Okay.
Sorry, with an adapter.
Yeah, that's okay. So that's just bad writing. But it's,
I believe that you're right. I think that's
it's got to be the controller plus cable for Windows.
Right.
And
it is about 50.
Controller plus adapter. That would make sense.
Yep.
God, I hope it comes with a controller in it. All this to play Fallout. Which means, of course, I had to buy Fallout 4 on the Xbox One and the PC. Would you like a Fallout 3 coupon code?
No. Thank you, though.
Sell it to you for $47.88. All right. So I didn't really need any of that, though, because the controller hooked up to the Xbox One.
It depends on how far away you're going to be. Right? I don't know how you play games or where you would play games. I mean, if you know.
Oh, I see. Because if you're using it wirelessly with the Xbox One, you have to be near in enough proximity.
You have to be near enough that it would.
No, I wanted to play in the living room, so this is good. I needed this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you're fine.
I'll use it once, and then I'll give it to my son as a Christmas gift. All right. Sorry about that, Mary Jo. Let's talk about something you really care about.
Oh, the Xbox 360 controller on Windows? So listen, it's very similar.
Let's talk about Windows 10 Mobile.
Windows 10 Mobile. Which phone are you looking at there, Mary Jo Foley? You're going to get the 950 XLA?
No.
You're going to get the 950?
I'm a Verizon user.
Oh, that's
right. I'm a Verizon user.
You were going to get a Droid.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do.
But that's a bummer.
Yeah. We're still not hearing any good news about Verizon capability here. So.
I don't think you're ever going to hear good news, unfortunately.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
But we did hear this week, thanks to Daniel Rubino, that the likely launch in the U.S. of the 950 and the 950 XL is Friday, November 20th, which is
kind of bad
soon.
Timing for me and for you.
That's very soon.
Yep.
Yeah, we don't know that for a fact. Microsoft still hasn't said that. And that date is for when AT&T may be starting to sell the 950 in the U.S. No carriers have said they are going to be picking up the 950 XL, right? No U.S. carriers. So
very strange. I mean, that's kind of the one I really want.
Right. And what Microsoft has said, I believe they've said this publicly, is that they're going to have both of the phones available unlocked in their stores. But, you know, in the U.S., not everyone wants to buy an unlocked phone. Some people still want to hold out for the contract on contract, right?
Right, right.
So if you're that person, AT&T, I think, for now. Anyway. And, you know, a lot of people have been asking us what is going on with mobile right now.
What is going on with mobile right now?
Right. There's no new build lately. I've heard that soundboard sound. I've heard they're testing inside Microsoft. You know how they have rings inside Microsoft, that they're testing a build with the same number, 10586, threshold 2, on phones inside the company. But they haven't released that test build to insiders yet, officially. You're a cricket.
Just what it's like to sleep in New York City.
Exactly.
That's not a cricket. That's a cockroach. Right.
It's a rat.
Yeah, by the way, Fallout 4, giant cockroaches.
Yeah, great.
Ew.
New.
We don't need that in New York. We have those live.
But you do get a dog that looks exactly like the dog from Call of Duty. So I'm thinking
there might be a cat.
Well, you know, Ghost 2 should be next year, and that would be our first opportunity for a cat.
I hope you put a suggestion in through user voice.
Okay. Maybe I should do that, actually.
Maybe you should.
Get them in the campaign.
But yeah, back to Windows 10 and phones and mobile. That's all we know on the 950 and the 950 XL. We haven't heard anything else. I know in Europe, the availability dates sound like they're around early December for those phones.
Yeah.
We don't have any other information right now.
These things being the phones, have been delayed repeatedly, right? I was told back in July we were going to see them in September, then it was going to be October, and then the October event happened. Well, we don't have them to give out, and maybe it'll be November, and I'm going to murder this phone.
I'm like, is that me or you?
Throw it in my trash. Sorry, I my handset that I keep in here usually has the ringer off, but I switch phones, and now everyone I know is going to start calling me. I just am concerned with what's going on with the schedule and kind of the silence around the really big issues around Windows Phone. I mean, there's a lot of things being chipped away. Obviously, things like OneDrive. There are apps that are disappearing. There are things they've never really addressed recently, like mobile payments, which I think is a big deal for people.
I know. They haven't said anything about that.
You know, for people like me that really love Windows Phone and they love the camera and the high-end Lumias, I mean, these new Lumias...
Oh, they look so good.
Mm. But it's a hard thing for me to turn around to someone who's maybe reading my site or someone I know out in the world and like, hey, the market for a new phone. I mean, why would I ever buy one of these things instead of an iPhone or an Android? And aside from, you know, the permanence of your soul and things like that, it's kind of hard to give them a really good reason. Like, there's no app story there at all. Mm. And it's gone to the point where I don't really feel comfortable recommending it as much as I love it, you know, and it's delay, and we'll see. I'm sure I'm going to really love this thing, but I'm not sure.
Paul and I both got to hold them really briefly at an event that Microsoft had, and we both were like, "Wow, they actually feel like really nice phones.
Really nice.
They look great. The camera is supposed to be redone and really amazing."
Mary Jo refused to check the person while I ran out the door with the phone.
I tried. You know? I did try, but no. We talk about these phones a lot now, and we're not the only ones who talk about them this way, as kind of stopgap phones. These were phones already in the pipeline from Nokia before Microsoft got rid of most of Nokia's staff. Right. And everybody keeps saying, well, when's the Surface phone? Because that's what the successor is. And we don't know when that is, or even if there really is one. I mean, we think there's going to be one. But
the way they talk, it seems inevitable, unless Microsoft decides we're not doing phones anymore. But
right,
in the sense that, you know, Panos Panay took over the phone hardware,
yeah,
you know, they're, the teams are kind of meshing together. I think he talked about that on stage at the event. And it's hard. It's hard not to imagine this happening. And it's hard not to look forward to that. They have something to sell now. Well, someday soon. So they don't want to really have that conversation. Why would they? And I, honestly, what Windows Phone doesn't need is another year in the wilderness. I mean, you know, the usage share, market share goes down and down and down every day. So I think there are fundamental issues that Microsoft just can't solve around those apps, both the apps we'll never have and the apps that are disappearing. And then around, you know, mobile payments and things like that. And there's no good solution. I don't know that there's something, you know, people, they should have shipped a flagship last year. They should have done this. It doesn't really, I don't think any of it matters. I don't think anything would have changed what happened. So it's just, we're in a kind of a tough spot.
What do you think, though, of the, because I haven't been running the insider previews, but what do you think of the most recent ones you've run? Is this ready? Like when it does start rolling out to phones in December? Ready?
It's great. Yeah, it's really nice. I really like it a lot. I mean, it looks beautiful. Yeah. There's also, you know, you can see some of the, there's some, a little goofiness to this, but you could take a Windows 10 app, not every single one of them, but a lot of the inbox apps, and drag them down to kind of a little phone shape on your desktop. And look, there it is. Mm-hmm. There's the Windows Phone version of that app. The Photos app does that. The Maps app, you know, I think the Mail app does as well. The Messaging app, the phone app. You can see the consistent DNA. And when I think back to the original kind of vision or announcement about Windows Phone 7 series, as it was called at the time, 5 years ago, the theory then was, this is Windows NT in your pocket. This is something that should thrill anyone who cares about Windows, this notion, you know.
Wait a minute, really? Windows NT in your pocket, that's what you're going with?
Yeah, because you talk about PowerShell.
Sometimes. No, it's powerful. Yeah,
this
can you do PowerShell on Windows Phone?
No, but it could. Oh, you know, in other words, they don't offer that, but they could. And I still sort of think, you know, one of the neatest things about the Surface Phone, and this is speculation on top of speculation, right? We don't even know that Surface Phone is happening, nor do we know what I'm about to say, which is that it could be an Intel-based thing. I mean, imagine if the Surface Phone, if part of the value prop there was, when you're walking around in the world with this thing as a phone, it's just a phone. It runs all the apps. It's the same as Windows Phone is today. But when you plug it into a Continuum dock or you do that wirelessly, the Intel processor's there, and now you can run desktop apps in Continuum. And you can do PowerShell and Visual Studio, and Photoshop, and iTunes. That becomes a much more exciting thing and is a much more kind of full-featured vision of this Continuum thing, which I think in this current version is really not going to move the dial at all. But if you could run an Intel version of this thing, now you're talking about a potential real differentiator. But again, that what I just said is a fantasy. I just made that up. We don't know that that's happening.
Mm-mm. No, we don't know.
And that's a shame that you have to guess. But they don't want to distract from, you know, what's going on right now with the new Surfaces and the Windows 10 and all of that. And they say, we'll wait till later. And we'll talk about
that. I don't know.
You can't say this stuff now, right? Give it, hey, we know we just announced this piece of junk over here, but you know what we're going to do next.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to let it breathe.
I know. In a way, I think they need to tell people what to expect, though, because otherwise you have people like me who say, okay, do I wait and see next year what happens? Or do I jump now if I want a new phone?
And once you jump, it's really unlikely people will jump back, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of settle on what they want.
Yeah. I mean, this week, Satya Nadella was at an event in London called Future Decoded. And he was demoing, like he's done at a couple recent events, an iPhone that's not his phone, but an iPhone. It had all Microsoft apps on the screen. And that's their other plan B, right? It's like, hey, if we can't do Windows Phone, we're going to make sure all our mobile apps are on iOS and Android. And then at least we still have a place in mobile. But if they do intend to stay in phones, I think they need to throw something out there for people who are loyal phone users so they know what's next.
Yeah, I agree.
I know you don't want to spoil the market, but these phones, the 950 and 950 XL, it does feel like a stopgap to me. And it doesn't really feel like this is the phone to wait for.
Given that, would you say, like, do we know that is the next build in April? Do we know that for a fact? Or
we know it's around April. Yeah.
Okay. So is April too late to say that? if the thing that I just popped out of the top of my head is a thing. I mean, would that be an appropriate time? Is that too late, too soon? I mean, can they do that?
I don't know. It depends what they have in the pipeline now or what they've got done for phones, right? We don't know that. We know they've said they plan to do a maximum of six new models a year, 2 flagships maximum, 2 business phones maximum, and 2 phones for the developing markets maximum.
Sure.
There haven't been any leaks on a Surface phone. Not that there necessarily would be, but we haven't even had really a true leak or even a code name, have we? I don't think.
I feel comfortable saying that this is clearly something they're planning, whatever this is, meaning a Surface phone, that some combination of design and implementation, quality level, and the meshing of those teams is going to result in something that they look at and say, we have to call this a Surface phone, because this is not a Lumia anymore. This is not something that has a lot of Nokia or any Nokia DNA in it. This is something... Yeah. That came out of this group that's been doing Surface, the manufacturing process, et cetera. I would like to see it include that Intel bit. I think that's what, puts it over the top. I sort of feel like, Microsoft, or I should say Windows on ARM is never going to happen in a meaningful way. That they were able to sell tens of millions of devices on ARM as phones. And it's 2.3% market share now. It just hasn't done it. It's not going to work.
The question, though, and Dennis Swart, who's listening, says, are the Intel chips in the phones powerful enough to run the desktop apps like Visual Studio? I don't know.
It depends. I mean, if you think about a phone from would come out a year from now, talking if it's a Atom, whatever those chips are called, you see, like the Atom that's in the low-end Surface 3, a device that would have 4 gigabytes of RAM and 32 gigs of storage. I mean, we're talking about an HP Stream laptop. We're talking about a Surface 3. If they could fit that into the form factor with the smaller screen and make that thing work, who can say?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I mean, I think it's technically feasible.
Yeah.
That would be intriguing. And maybe that's enough to get somebody back to the market if somebody like Mary Jo chooses Android device and then sees that.
It's why did Apple make the iPad Pro really? I don't think that they communicated it very effectively, but what it's really about is this notion of there being a crossover market where, we have individual devices that do discrete things, but if we have this one device that can do 2 things, that might be particularly beneficial to businesses. Mm-hmm. And I think that this kind of device, a phone that can also be a PC when docked, speaks to the same market, And that's Microsoft's historically strong market. I mean, I don't know that Microsoft has ever really taken off with consumers, with some exceptions like Xbox or Skype, which they acquired. I think their real cachet is with businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's something to be said for having an all-in-one experience, having everything match. We get IT. We get IT professionals in here all the time, and in fact, I had a guy in here. Here we go. We have another guy in here. Zachary's an IT guy, but also desktop support guy. But we had a guy who does IT for an insurance company, and I said, "Are you having to deal with a lot of Apple devices? Because I'm sure it's a Windows house."
Yeah,
and he said, "Yeah, everybody brings their Apple device. We just have to accommodate it." I bet you IT would love to say, "Hey, we've got a great choice for you. It's called a Surface."
Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Our Surface today, whether it's a Surface Book or a Surface Pro 4 or Surface 3, whatever, is essentially a 2-in-1 device or a multi-form factor kind of device transforming PC of some kind. You can plug it into a dock and it becomes a desktop computer, And it's a full-featured, full-powered, it's a really good experience. That experience with, you can add phone to that, it becomes pretty interesting. And I think we know for a fact there are more people getting work done every day on phones than on tablets, right? Far more.
Yeah.
So a phone that could transform into a computer is in many ways more valuable or more useful than a tablet that can transform into a computer. It's a bigger market, potentially.
And do you think it's meaningful that they're using the same numbering for the phone build as they use for the
well, it's the same. It's the same code.
Yeah. Is it really the same code?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And that's what I mean.
Hard to believe. I really
an Intel version of a phone.
NT in your pocket. I know.
Yeah.
No, it's the real. Same core. Yeah. It's the same core, right?
Happen. Yeah. Yeah. The same apps.
Yep. Yeah.
Huh. You know. Sure.
All right.
They're just customized to work. The UI adapts, right?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a big menu board of components, and phone is right. this one, and
yeah.
Same kernel. Is that fair to say?
Same core. The same core, which is not exactly the kernel.
It's more than a kernel, right? I mean, the whole app layer is. Right. It is, but it's also
okay.
Yeah,
it's RT.
That term is not really something we talk about anymore in the Windows world, Leo. So no.
Runtime.
I know. No, we don't want to go back to the confusing Windows RT versus WinRT.
Right. What is this RT you speak of?
Okay. I'm sorry I said anything.
And why did I just get a chili up my back?
Please forgive me. Please. Let's take a break. So that Paul can get his chili off his back. Right now, we are brought to you by Wealthfront.com, which is a really great solution for people who are, and I hope this is you, investing. Look, you got to invest for the long term, right? This is really important. And that could be you're saving up for a rainy day fund, or you're saving up for a down payment on a house, or college fund, or retirement. You've got, and you may have all of those. You got to be doing it. The question is, how do you maximize your returns on that? And you could do it yourself. That's I'm one, and I bet you most geeks. Oh yeah, I can handle that. I'm smarter than the average bear. I just go out there and I'll buy some stocks, and it'll all be fine. And then you never look at it again. And 10 years later, you go, "Whoa, that didn't work out so good." But it's too late, unless you're really ready to commit. Like, I'm going to pay attention to this. I'm going to keep up on this. I'm going to do the research. That's not a good strategy. Now, you say, well, I could hire somebody to do that. Yeah, and that's expensive. Traditional advisors charge really outrageous fees, between 1 and 3%. 1 to 3% of what you have under management every year. Every year. Plus hidden fees for transactions and changes. That's, you'd have to do extra well to cover that, right? That's the starting point is like 1 to 3%. That's crazy. Wealthfront gives you access to world-class, long-term, I want to emphasize this, because I'm going to explain, it's done by a computer. So you might think, oh, that's day trading. It's not that. But it's very smart. It takes advantage of the computer's ability to do stuff a human wouldn't do. And computers, they don't take lunch breaks. They don't need benefits. They're cheap. That's why Wealthfront can charge you 0.25% a year. And there are never any commissions or hidden fees. It's an amazing solution. And the computer is using software designed by some of the smartest people on Wall Street. Burton Malkiel, whose book, The Random Walk Down Wall Street, was a real inspiration to me when I was younger. Not that long ago, but I was younger. 10 years ago, maybe. Charles Ellis, also an investor's guide, the Smart Investor's Guide to Wall Street. Amazing guys. They have a board. And so these guys are saying to the software designers, here's what you need to do. And the software is doing stuff, very sophisticated stuff, like tax loss harvesting and direct indexing. I'll give you an example. If you sell a stock, the rules are that you can't reinvest in that stock within 30 days or you'll get short-term capital gains. So what they do is they keep you in the sector. They may sell off a stock to take some losses to help you with your taxes, but then they can reinvest in the sector, and they're smart enough to say, okay, but we want to balance this in the same sector, so we're going to sell off Ford, but we're going to buy GM, that kind of thing. Very sophisticated. It also gives you a chance, in a way, to play in markets that you're too small to play in when you're first starting out. What you should do is go to wealthfront.com/windows and get the sample portfolio that they would. You have to answer some questions about your risk aversion, your time frame, that kind of thing, so they can make a portfolio for you. And you'll see this is no cost. You'll see what they would do. You could start with as little as $500. So just do that at least. Put $10 a month in, just for yourself. You got to do this. And if you sign up at wealthfront.com/windows, you'll get your first $15,000.
management fee free. It will cost the management will cost you nothing, and not for the first year, but forever. First $15,000 fee free. I don't know how to describe this to you better. You got to go. You got to read up on it. I think you'll be very impressed. It's a really, really good idea. Wealthfront.com. They've got $2.6 billion in assets under management now. That's 20x growth in 2 years. 2 years! That'll give you some idea. Wealthfront.com/Windows. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. And now, for compliance purposes, I have to tell you, Wealthfront Incorporated is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are offered through Wealthfront Brokerage Corporation, member FINRA and SIPC. This is not a solicitation to buy or sell securities. Investing in securities involves risks, and there is the possibility of losing money. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Please visit Wealthfront.com to read their full disclosure. So I'm having all sorts of trouble.
It looks like the type of tray you would serve like high tea on. You know?
You could.
You could carry out like these really tall.
Sir, your newspaper and your tea.
Yeah. You could drip absinthe on something.
It's kind of funny when you look at it because, of course, software doesn't yet. I mean, software is not going to, for a while, take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just big.
Yep. It's literally an oversized iPad.
Yeah, I mean, at least
Office right is now. Probably going to be pretty good on it.
Yeah,
I think Office will be a good choice on it.
You know,
yeah. But when you see like,
yeah,
that's a mini. But you know, you get the sure. idea. I think you know, if I were Apple, I would just say buy all three sizes.
Yeah, I think that is literally what their advice.
You're going to want all three sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and many many keyboards. Oh, Paul. Paul, 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 Paul. For those of you watching on video, that is a great... I hope you tweeted that picture.
He did. I did.
This is the pre-show. I'm reaching under my desk, and Paul is clearly getting goosed. And Mary Jo is just embarrassed to be part of
it. It looks like I edited my face to make it more comical, but the truth is I didn't.
That is very, very... That should go viral. I think that's a caption contest right there. This is what you're missing if you don't watch Twitter every single week. For those of you not watching on video, well, what can I say?
It's just like I said earlier, I amuse myself. What can I say?
I can't describe it. Competitors are eliminating Microsoft exclusives and uniqueness. I'm not sure what you're talking. Google Maps is one, right? Yes.
Yeah, that's like a, you know, by the way, how did they not do this until now? You know,
it's weird that
if you've ever used Google Maps, it really is awesome.
I mean, they did it, but they hid it away. Nobody knew that you could do
but it
this.
Was very, but We're they did about it in such a way that it was for data. A trip. Right. And it wasn't all the stuff. You know, there's a lot of data in maps that is not maps or traffic. It's attractions and things on the side of the road and whatever. And they're finally implementing the full offline download maps experience, just like we've had on Here Maps since, 2012?
Yep.
Something like that. So
it's good. I mean, I still put Here Maps on everything just because, which isn't a Microsoft product, I know. But
No, I know that.
Because I can download like the entire United States. You know what it's great for? Airplanes. Because you look at the window, you go, what the hell is that? And you can't turn on your phone to get download the map, but your GPS can continue to work on the airplane. So you can see exactly where you are. You can even see your little dot moving at high speed.
That's great. I've never done that.
I do that with Here Maps because I download the U.S.
Yeah.
I mentioned
someday soon you'll be doing it with Google Maps.
Yeah. Well, so I'm not sure what they've done. It's not all.
Yeah. So literally, you can download maps just like you can in Here.
Oh, good.
And I don't know how granular it is. If you've ever done Here Maps, you know you can go to like when we went to France. You navigate in. It's France, and then it's a region of France, right. And then it's a whatever wherever Lyon is.
Because it takes up a lot of space, so you don't want to download more than you need.
But, one of the big pieces of advice I've had for people buying low-end Windows phones over the years has been, leave the SIM in, but don't do a contract. You can do all this stuff over Wi-Fi. Download the maps. It's a full-fledged GPS. It works just fine without cellular connectivity. you know, you can do all the other stuff that you can do with a, you know, with a phone or a media player or whatever. So this is such a fantastic benefit. And of course, you know, a couple of summers ago when the Lumia 520, I think, was the big phone and it was $60 or whatever, it was such a no-brainer. And, you know, now it's like, well, all right, okay, right. The guys who make the best maps on Earth, of course, they finally figured this out. I mean, I'm surprised it took them so long, but...
I wonder why. I mean, was there some reason? It seems like, yeah, that's...
I know. I don't know.
Maybe they didn't... In the early days, people like TomTom and others sold $100. Remember those $100 apps for iPhone? That would include all the maps, because that was their business, right? They was, you have a standalone GPS.
Or think about the things you'd have in your car. You get a DVD.
Right.
You could buy it from the dealership or whatever.
So maybe they were trying
once a year, you know, or
not
something.
To step on those guys' toes.
Yeah, I don't know.
But now that they're kind of basically all gone, there's no reason not to do it, right?
It's, you know, Google, I'm sorry. I mean, I hate to, I feel bad because I want Here Maps to be awesome and all that stuff, but Google Maps is incredible.
You can't compare.
And it just keeps getting better.
What did Here Maps sell for? They sold it to.
Yeah, it was that consortium of German auto manufacturers like Audi, BMW, Mercedes, I think.
And, it wasn't very much, I don't think.
Cabal.com.
Yeah.
.eu.
I don't think it was too expensive.
No, it was some billions, right?
It was? Oh,
yeah.
I think they were smart to get it.
Let's see.
My Audi uses Google.
$3 billion to Audi, BMW, and Mercedes.
$3 billion seems like not a lot.
The thing about maps is it's a real resource-intensive thing, right? It's not just about collecting data. You literally have to send vehicles around. You have to send drones up in the air. It's
expensive.
It's like mobilizing for World War II. I mean, not a lot of companies can do it. Not a lot of companies would even want to do it.
Apparently Uber really wants to do it because the maps are so important to their drivers and to their process because, you know, you see a map, you see where the car is.
Yep. I just did that. So I don't use Uber, but I do have the Uber app installed because, you know, you never know. And for some reason, I think this was literally last night, I looked at the Uber app and it shows you can select different kinds of cars. I don't even understand what the difference is, but you can. It shows the little black cars driving around.
I know.
The map.
Isn't that awesome?
And it's like it's like a little video game or something like, I want that guy.
Do you use Uber, Mary Jo? You must use it.
No, because I live in New York, and so I don't really need it.
You have cabs and subways?
You have cabs, yeah.
Even when we were in New York, we were Ubering.
You were?
Really?
Yeah.
So there's different...
I think if I lived in the outer boroughs and not right in the middle of Manhattan, I probably would use it a lot.
It's hard to get a cab if you're out in the Bronx or something, yeah.
Right.
But remember, Microsoft sold a bunch of its Bing assets for mapping and data collection to Uber this year, too. Right. So...
No, Uber definitely wants to be a player in this. Not from
and it's integrated now into Cortana.
Not from a consumer point of view, but so Cortana. All right, that's one.
The second one is obviously the iPad Pro, right? And I should have added the Google Pixel C or whatever that thing is. You know, these sort of crossover devices.
In a month or so, they say by Christmas.
Yeah, so Google and Apple are both using mobile OSs, not a big desktop OS to... go into the 2-in-1 space. It's going to be an interesting battle because obviously when you think about a tablet, it makes sense to go with the smartphone OS. 2-in-1, you know, we'll have to see because you're losing something in each equation, right? So we'll see which one does it. And then the last one, I know no one on earth thinks that this is a threat to Microsoft because Microsoft doesn't play in this space, but Apple Music is coming to Android. And I find that to be very, it is on Android, I should say already. Looks exactly like the version on Apple except for the, you know, Android UI conventions. That's interesting because, of course, a decade or whatever ago, iTunes came to Windows, right? Because they had to, and they're doing this because they have to. I mean, I don't know why any self-respecting Android user would ever use an Apple Music application, but, you know, there it is. The thing is, there really only were a couple of truly cross-platform music services before, and one of them was Groove. You know, Spotify's the other big one, and then, you know, things like Pandora, et cetera, but... Mixed Radio maybe should be in there as well. Here's the thing. You know, we were just talking earlier about Windows Phone and, if they fail in phone and they give up on phone, well, here's what they can do. I think Mary Jo pointed to the iPhone and Android as, you know, here's our mobile apps. The thing is, you know, this other stuff needs to be important to Microsoft too, right? You know, that they need the whole ecosystem. If they're going to thrive on iOS and Android, they need a a solution that works across all of that stuff as well. If people, you know, when they have bad news about OneDrive, no one's ever even heard of Groove. You know, what's left? Like, what is it that you want that Microsoft does on Android or iOS? It's pretty much Office, isn't it? I mean, this is pretty much it, isn't it? That really is meaningful. And that's a legacy business in many ways, right? I mean, I know they have new mobile apps and everything. I think this stuff is a problem because I don't think that people on those platforms think of Microsoft all that much. And as these little advantages get eaten away at, people have less of a reason to choose Microsoft platforms. And I'm not sure what we're left with if our fallback plan is to be app makers on Android and iOS, you know?
That's a good point.
So, you know, again, none of these are earth-shattering in and of themselves.
Right.
But, I mean, I think they're all indications of a trend that is accelerating and expanding. And I don't understand where they draw the line. You know, for example, Microsoft just blew up OneDrive. It's economically infeasible.
Right.
Okay, but you were the only guys doing this, and now you're not. So what else are you not serious about, you know? Mm-hmm. You just killed Groove in many ways. I mean, one of the big deals with Groove was you could throw all your music in OneDrive and access it from any device. And that's fine now if you have 17 songs because your storage is so small now.
But the Groove storage thing isn't part of that thing they cut, right?
Yeah.
Well, the Groove storage thing I'm talking about is Groove Music Pass. That's when you're paying for it. So if you pay for Groove Music Pass, yes, you will not lose that.
You get the storage still.
But what I mean is, you know, you had 50 gigs of free storage.
But you just mean if you're not part of that. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you and I pay for Groove Music.
I know. You and me.
It's just the two of you. I hope you're enjoying it.
Two other people, maybe.
Yeah.
I have two subscriptions, so I think I'm actually keeping it going. But I don't think a lot of people do. I know a lot of people listening to this do. I'm not going to hear from people. I do. I know some people do, but Groove never factors into any comparison anywhere.
Yeah.
It never factors into any discussion. When Apple puts Apple Music on Android, everyone talks about Spotify. They talk about Pandora. No one ever mentions Groove. Groove does not exist. You know, and that's a problem. I mean, if they're not going to be serious about this stuff, if they're not going to get it out there, if they can't succeed in getting it out there, you know, I mean, when do they give up on this? You know, we're talking about them giving up on Windows Phone. If they can give up on Windows Phone, Groove is an afterthought, you know? So is Bing Maps.
I'm kind of surprised they're still in the Groove Music space, actually.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're in gaming because that's such a huge grossing application category.
Right.
But if you look at what else they are investing heavily in, it's productivity apps. So where does Groove fit in there, right? Not gaming.
No, it's not. It's Groove is a bullet point on a list, and the list is an entertainment list, and it's a list of things you can do on an Xbox. You know, it's a list of things you can do that are fun on Windows 10. I mean, Microsoft wants Windows 10 to be fun. They don't want it just to be Office and Hadoop and whatever.
Yeah.
They want it to have some fun stuff. And
Hadoop's honestly, not fun enough? Come on. I think it's kind of fun.
Honestly, if they just added achievements to Hadoop, maybe we could have a discussion there. But I'm actually surprised they don't extend Xbox Live achievements to other experiences in Windows just to make it fun. They could have it for Windows Insiders. They could do it for Groove. Like, you've created 5 playlists as 20 experience points or whatever. I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised they don't do that stuff because they have
a handful of
things that succeed. Oh, where?
CRM. They're adding gamification stuff to CRM. Yep.
Nice. I think people would enjoy that.
Best customer.
We're not saving the platform here or anything, but I mean, I think that's kind of a fun. I just think it's kind of a fun thing. Plus, I love me my achievement points.
And then a couple of acquisitions.
Yeah, these are both kind of interesting. These both happened in the past few days. Also, one company Microsoft bought. What day was this? Late last week was called Mobile Data Labs. You might know them, Leo. They make Mile IQ, mileage tracking app.
Oh, yeah. I do know that, actually.
Yep. So it's one
actually,
of the...
I think they're trying to buy ads. So there's so much of that.
Interesting. Well, Microsoft owns them now.
I think they were trying to buy ads, as I remember. We were looking at that. Yeah.
Yep. So they're one of the top grossing finance apps. Sorry, top grossing apps from a financial standpoint in the iTunes store.
It's like how to track your business miles.
It is.
Yeah.
Tracking your business mileage. Yep. So that fits in with the productivity mission that Microsoft has, and also the mission to buy up some of the most successful apps on other mobile platforms. We don't know when they're going to have a Windows Phone version of this. I don't think they have one yet. And they didn't say. Yeah. The other company they bought this week was a Israeli security company called Secure Islands. And I heard they paid about $77 million for this company. This is their third Israeli security buy, I think, in the past year or so, which is kind of interesting. And if you're wondering why there are so many Israeli security startups, just think of the Israeli Defense Forces as kind of the feeding ground for a lot of these companies. A lot of the people who work at these apps, at these companies in Israel worked there, and so they have a lot of security experience. This is an application that Microsoft's going to integrate in with Azure Rights Management so that it'll help them provide better compliance and protection for files that are stored in the cloud and on premises. So that's also kind of an interesting buy. But as we get towards the end of the year, you sometimes see Microsoft buy up a lot of smaller companies. It just seems to be the way it goes.
Yeah. Let's see. Anybody have questions? Questions from the peanut gallery before we get to the
Mary Jo, you got to promote your Island Wood Bridge.
Yes.
What's that?
Yeah. Brad Sams just tweeted, you know, he was making a pun on a bar on Astoria called Island Wood. You know, we're joking about the code names for some of the Microsoft bridging technologies that we've heard nothing about since August. Right. And I was saying, you know, there is a bridge called Islandwood, which I think is what Microsoft named their iOS bridging technology after. So I said, you know, there is a bridge somebody still wants to sell you, Microsoft. But we haven't, that's one of those weird technologies. We heard a lot about it at Build that Microsoft was trying to get iOS developers to bring their apps over to Windows 10. And they had this bridging technology codenamed Islandwood, and we've heard nothing about it since.
Has it been released? It has been released, right? I mean,
they put I think the bulk of the code, if not all of it, out as open source, so they could get some input from developers before they release it. And they had said it was going to be released before the end of this calendar year, but so far nothing. We still have a month, I guess.
I'm downloading as quickly as I can Microsoft Word. This is rebuilding, but I've got Outlook on here already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like it doesn't, I mean, it's clearly, I don't know. Yep. Yeah, it's bigger.
You need to see it on the big screen. You know, do you get more
real estate
emails on the left? Do you get more of the email message on the right?
Yeah. As soon as Word finishes downloading, I will I will show you. It's a nice screen, I have to say. I mean, you can't really tell. Mm. Hey, guys, can you, engineers... Can you put the Apple TV? I'm air playing it out to an Apple TV. If they put that in the switcher, I could show you. Gimpy Gumple will probably get that done in a second.
But,
poor Gimpy Gumple.
Daniel Rubino was complaining that this month was his 20th high school reunion, to which I replied, well, this month is my 30th high school reunion, and to which Alex replied, this month is my 10th high school reunion, so I try to figure out a way to pat him on the head on Twitter.
Actually, it's perfect. It goes all the way around because my 40th high school reunion.
Yeah,
was 2 years ago.
Sure.
So there you go. I didn't go. I don't want to see how old I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what you see, right? Yeah. You look at other people. Yeah. You go, my God, do I look like that?
Yeah.
Which Apple TV should I join up on this? Production. I'm on Studio Apple TV 1. That's not the one I want, apparently. I see Apple TV and Studio Apple TV 1.
Well, try the other one, then.
Try the other one? You're not seeing it on this one? Oh, there's apparently two. I see two. I also see TriCaster, but we don't want to do that. We can airplay to the TriCaster. Yeah, is that it? What is that? That's an Apple TV. All righty, all Rudy. Do we have to do anything with the Apple TV to make it?
I'm wondering if somebody swaps some things around.
Oh, well, it doesn't. It's not that important. Oh, I see it now. Yeah. So it is Studio Apple TV 1.
Okay.
Look at that. That's so cool. So let's look at Excel, shall we? It's kind of strangely constrained. It's going all the way to the... Just so you know, it's going all the way to the edges here.
Yeah, that's the square.
Know. Yeah. It's a... Right, because it's not a wide. Oh, God. I have to sign in, don't I?
I'll sign in later, just so you can look at it.
Yeah. Just sign in later. You're all set.
Yep. I feel like I am.
It does, you know... Okay, so this isn't doing it justice because of the borders.
Right.
But if I open it here, you'll see, you know what? That is actually kind of usable.
Yep.
Right? And I like touch. And while the targets are a little tiny, it's doable.
The problem is you can only touch it to select, you know, I mean, you can move around on the keyboard. I sort of feel like touchpad is inevitable here, you know?
Yeah, there is no touchpad on either on the Apple product, but there are arrows on the Logitech product. So let me... Let me attach it to the Logitech keyboard here. And use my fingerprint to do absolutely nothing. Let's just see. Yeah, the arrows work. So you can use it.
Yeah, right on the keyboard. Sure. So, but, you know,
but there is no trackpad on either of the Apple. Because that doesn't make sense to have a trackpad on a touch device, right? Or does it?
Oh, well, I don't know. It would be nice for image editing. It would be nice for precise cursor placement in Word.
Right. Anyway, there you go. It's kind of cool. It's pretty swift, pretty snappy.
Yep.
I don't know if this is better in any way than a Surface. Oh, you're trying to unlock it.
It's simpler, but it's not as full featured, right? And that includes the version of Excel that you would run on there.
Right. Well, we're going to take a break when we come back a little more with Paul and Mary Jo, the back of the book coming up in just a little bit. That means tips and such. And Zachary has brought me some beer from Iowa. So
nice.
We will talk about I will sample the beer from Iowa. I've been saving it to the end of the show. That way I'll be drunk on This Week in Google, not on Windows Weekly. That's how it's supposed to be.
That's great.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're the person in your business that does the hiring, which could be if you're the only person in your business, or you're in HR or anywhere in between, you got to know about ZipRecruiter because ZipRecruiter is helping you do the single most important job you have in a business, which is hiring the right people. What is a company? A company is all, it's made of people. It's all about a group of people uniting with a common vision. Steve Jobs used to say the company is one of the single most important inventions of the 20th, or I guess you'd probably say the 19th century, because there is a power that happens when people unite with a common vision. A bad employee can knock you off the tracks. A great employee can send you to the moon. So it's so important when you're doing the hiring. Unfortunately, doing the hiring, especially if you're a small business or it's you, is really tough because you're down a man. It's like you got a guy in the penalty box and you're trying to score a hat trick. It's the last time you're going to be at your tip-top. But you need to be. So that's why I want you to use ZipRecruiter. It will help you find the best candidates because with one click of the mouse, you'll post to 100-plus job boards, including all the social media stuff, Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and, of course, Craigslist, but also to all the big job boards, too. Now, that may scare you because you're going to say, well, how many applicants am I going to get? That's not a bad thing. You want many applicants, as long as there's an easy way to screen them, and there is, because instead of emailing you and phoning you, they flow into the ZipRecruiter interface. In fact, they start right away because ZipRecruiter has 6 million current resumes on file, and they go through that. You're going to start getting applicants. You can quickly screen them, rate them, and pick the right person fast. In as few as 24 hours, you'll be ready to go. No wonder over 400,000 businesses use ZipRecruiter, and you can try it right now for free. Listen to this email we got from Dan. He said the hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is you have to spend extra time recruiting while you're short-staffed, just what I was saying. But with ZipRecruiter, I've gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage candidates in one place. I told you so. Right now, try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. 4-day trial, but that's enough to really get going here. Get an idea of what ZipRecruiter can do for you. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. You are going to love this. It is the most important job you do today. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking Windows on Windows Weekly. And I think we'll let Paul take the lead here on his tip of the week.
So last week, I think, it seems like a million years ago, Microsoft announced a lot of bad news about OneDrive, and we all kind of digested it.
Gulp.
And, you know, try to make that work. I've gotten a lot of requests from people who are really burned by this, want to switch services, et cetera, et cetera. And so I kind of took a look at the big, you know, tier one services, not the – I didn't look at some of the – you know, I didn't look at Bob Storage or, you know, the storage services from companies I, you know, frankly don't know or trust. But I looked at the big ones, you know, Google and Amazon, Microsoft, obviously, Apple, you know, Dropbox, that kind of thing. From the perspective of a consumer, from the perspective of a Windows user, and you know, how do these things compare price-wise? You know, what do you get with them and so forth? And the funny thing is, maybe it's not that funny, but even given the lowered storage limits, whether you have free OneDrive or you're paying for storage for OneDrive or you're getting storage through Office 365 or other promotions, honestly, what I found is that OneDrive is actually still kind of the best deal for Windows users, especially if you choose to pay for Office 365. And so Office 365 Personal is $70 a year. Office 365 Home is $99, and with each you get an additional 1 terabyte of storage per user and full installs of Office, like full Office and Office on, like, you know, your iPad Pro or whatever other mobile devices you want to get. And so it's still kind of the right deal, I think, for most people. And for me personally, the way I'm doing things, I had described how I do a lot of my mission critical kind of day-to-day stuff in Dropbox now, and I use OneDrive more for archival storage, just to kind of get it up off the computer and somewhere where I could get to it if I needed to. Honestly, it's still best for that as well. And so, you know, I'm not happy with the way they communicated what they did. I'm not happy with the changes that they made. But even given what happened, I still feel like OneDrive is actually the best solution for on Windows, given, you know, everything that's happened. So it was kind of interesting. I sort of suspected that was going to be the case. And this could change any day. I mean, Box or Dropbox or Apple even or Amazon or someone could announce some awesome deal that would change that. But for now, I still feel like it's kind of the best one.
As somebody in the chat room says, all they had to say was a free terabyte online, almost unlimited, or virtually unlimited, yeah. Or if you're normal, it's unlimited.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, the way I would, I mean, we can't go back in time and change that,
too late.
Right? Yeah. But if I were to ask for anything to be different, it would be give people the ability to buy the storage they want, regardless of how much it is. And, you know, if $99 a year is 1 terabyte, how about $200 a year for 2 terabytes? You know, if that's what someone needs, you know, there would be people who would pay for that. Just give that as an option. Most people wouldn't take you up on it, but they don't seem interested in doing that. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens. And then the software pick of the week. So between now and last week, Call of Duty Black Ops 3 came out.
I am so surprised to see you here today, to be honest.
I was very nervous about this game because I really didn't like Advanced Warfare. There are 3 studios making Call of Duty games. And so every third year, it's, you know, a different studio, or every year it's a different studio. So,
yeah, they alternate, right? So they're always working on it. But that's
yeah,
how you
2 years ago. I'm sorry.
That's how you get a yearly release cycle. You have...
Yeah, so there are a series of games. And so Black Ops 3 is obviously the third Black Ops game, presumably the last one. Modern Warfare went 3 games. And the guys behind Modern Warfare are the guys, I think, who are doing Advanced Warfare now, right? So there presumably will be 3 Advanced Warfare games. 2 years ago, we got the first Ghosts game. And I could be getting this wrong. I apologize. I believe this is the third studio, the new studio. I think this is brand new. that these guys did work on previous Call of Duty games. And so next year, we should see the next Ghosts game or whatever. And so Ghosts, to me, was the last classic Call of Duty game of that kind of Modern Warfare era. That if you looked at Modern Warfare, Black Ops 1 and 2, and then Ghosts, they're all of a thing. You know, they're all very similar. And then with Advanced Warfare, they started adding the Titanfall-type vertical gameplay, which I really, really didn't like. And so I was really nervous about this. And actually, I love it. And I'm really happy to hear that because I hate learning new things. But it's great. And I'm trying to figure, you know, it's funny. I played through Halo 5. I played Halo 5 online a bunch. I'm terrible at it. It's an alien kind of world. It's, you know, obviously it's kind of high science fiction, whatever. There's something, as science fiction-y as Call of Duty really is, there's something grounded about it. And if you kind of came up out of the World War II stuff and you look at the multiplayer maps they have today, they are that world, you know. It's farmhouses and snow and, you know, and there's fantastical elements. Don't get me wrong. You're still jetpacking around and there's crazy weapons and all that stuff. But I think they've done a nice job of melding the future with the past in this game, and I guess I'll just be taking it on a game-by-game basis. I don't know. But this one's great. I really, really like it. And I thought I was going to be able to prestige before this episode, but soon. I'm getting there. First prestige.
So you're not even going to look at Fallout 4, are you? No interest at all?
No.
No. Not a bit.
No.
No.
The other thing that changed, actually, is I've always played the single-player games, and the way that I do that has changed. But I played, I think I completed one level in about 5 minutes of the next level, and I was just like, screw this. This is so stupid.
I want to shoot
it's
real
really,
people.
It's really about, yeah.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Multiplayer.
Yeah. No, that's what you want. Humans are so much better than
yeah. AIs. I so much prefer killing humans than
robots. Yeah, don't
you?
Why not, really?
Yeah.
I like the cries of humiliation and despair that I hear.
Well, trust me, I get it back in kind. But
yeah. Mary Jo Foley, she's got our Enterprise pick of the week.
I do, and my Enterprise pick is related to Azure. This week at the conference I mentioned earlier, Future Decoded, Microsoft talked about expanding the footprint of their cloud in Europe. So they talked about expanding their data center presence in the UK in 2016, I guess late 2016. They're going to be adding data centers there that will allow people to run Azure, Office 365, and then CRM online natively in the UK. So, you know, kind of hinting at the whole issue of where is your data residing and trying to calm customers about the fact that their data is within their boundaries instead of in the U.S. or other countries. This doesn't mean that the U.S. won't turn your data over, but as we know, Microsoft is fighting this through that Irish case that we've talked about a couple times on the show, and they're trying to make it so that they are one of the champions of not turning over data just recklessly or even non-recklessly at government request. The other data expansion announcement they made today was that they are going to be opening some data centers in Germany in conjunction with Deutsche Telekom. And this is really interesting because I guess I don't know this much about it, but in Germany, they have very much more stringent laws around data protection than they do in some other countries. So they are going to have Deutsche Telekom act as a data trustee. So they're actually the ones managing these data centers in Germany, and they're guaranteeing that customers' data will stay in these German data centers managed by a German data trustee. Again, does that mean that Microsoft will never turn your data over if a U.S. government body requests it and it's in Germany? I don't know. I don't know how and if that actually assures that they will or will not. But at least they're trying to find, it feels like some ways around customer concerns around U.S. government having access to their data. So it's kind of interesting stuff. Both of those are 2016 announcements, so we'll see how that evolves.
It's, you know, it's good for them to struggle.
It is. It is good for them to struggle. Yeah.
I mean, you know, to fight the powers that be. Whether they'll succeed is another matter, as you say.
I know. Exactly. But, and how much does it really mean versus public relations value? I don't know enough about that.
If they merely went to court and said, no, we don't want to give you the Irish data. We don't want to give. That's one thing. Because that, you know, they're going to lose. But, you know, it's fighting the good fight. But this is clever. Using Deutsche Telekom as a data trustee. This looks more like a genuine effort that might succeed. If it doesn't in the long run, I think people are still going to give Microsoft credit for trying.
I agree.
It's not. This doesn't look like show. You know, this isn't for show.
Right.
Codename pick of the week is my favorite melon ball liqueur.
Codename pick of the week is Midori. And Microsoft history buffs probably remember this codename. It's one I've been tracking for almost 10 years. It was a Skunkworks operating system project inside Microsoft where they were building a new operating system that was not based on Windows. And when we first started writing about Midori, me and others, Microsoft didn't want to even acknowledge it existed. But we found out that they actually had about 100 engineers on Midori. Oh. And they were some of their biggest name engineers, too. Finally, the covers have started coming off about Midori. And some people who previously couldn't talk about it are blogging about it, like Joe Duffy. He was one of the members of the team. I wrote a post this week pointing to some blog posts that he's doing around lessons learned from Midori. And I've also been looking around on LinkedIn lately and found a lot of references to Midori that previously were not public. So some interesting stuff if you want to find out about Midori.
They're not doing it anymore, right? I mean,
they're not doing it anymore. What they say, the public line is we're taking the lessons we learned from Midori and applying them to other products. But basically they disbanded the team for political or other reasons.
Do you think it was like wildly innovative? I mean, do we know anything about it?
The things we're learning about it is that it was doing some really innovative things around type safety and distributed computing and concurrency. They were really kind of pushing the envelope on not just the operating system itself, but the tools too. They even built a whole new browser that wasn't Edge or IE. Wow. So they did a lot of interesting stuff. I don't know if any of that will see the light of day and in what form. Like, will it just be little pieces of Midori that they show up, you know, kind of show up as parts of other products? I don't know. But I was always curious why they picked that code name because, you know, Midori is a liqueur, right? And I asked Joe Duffy on Twitter, I'm like, what was the code name? And he's like, don't worry, it wasn't about that nasty melon ball stuff.
When I was a nascent drinker, that was my first melon ball is my first drink. But in Boston area, we used to call that a Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Because when you were done, you had gotten bombed.
Yeah. Now, Duffy said, I always had heard it just was somebody on the team who liked the color green. Nice. And then someone else on the team chimed in on Twitter and said green was the color of the managed code documentation on MSDN at the time. I don't know if that is a joke or not a joke, but no one seems to really have the story.
Bright green colored musk melon flavored liqueur.
Musk melon.
Made by Suntory. And I can't find any other meaning for the word Midori. So
yeah. And Steven Sandoff notes Midori in Japanese means green. Yep. We know it's something to do with green, but what?
Yeah. Well, that makes the Pearl Harbor thing make all the more sense, too.
It is the, you know, it is the color of Microsoft, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, some people used to, back in the day, call Microsoft as a nickname that never caught on. They called them Big Green.
Big Green. Sometimes. Yeah, because IBM was Big Blue.
Right. And, you know, Seattle is the Emerald City. That's the nickname of Seattle.
So, here's the site, you know. discovermidori.com. It's Paul Thurrott's favorite booze.
Right. Right. Before Paul was married and was actually kind of an idiot.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. Yeah. It was the Jägermeister of its day.
It was kind of.
Speaking of which, time for beer. I've got one too after you're done with your beer pick of the week, which looks pretty good.
Yeah, my beer pick of the week is pretty good. It's from Westbrook Brewing. It's called Mexican Cake. Whoa. And it's an imperial stout. It's brewed with cocoa nibs, cinnamon sticks, and habanero peppers.
What?
So it has a little kick to it. Whoa. And it tastes like cake in a glass. It's high alcohol. It's a total dessert beer. But if you ever get to try this beer, it's really delicious. And it has, you know, it's not overpoweringly spicy, but you definitely taste the spiciness. Yeah. in that.
Everywhere you go in Germany, this is like a German joke. Beer is bread. So you can have it for dinner. It's bread. And now it's cake.
Have it for breakfast.
Have it for all the time.
Yeah.
No, in fact, they tell the story, and it's like eight different Germans told me the same story of going to their bed and breakfast, and the woman gave him beer in the morning for breakfast, and she said, beer is bread, this is your breakfast.
So. This is beer as cake.
Beer are you cake. Suggesting this didn't actually happen to those
I
gentlemen?
I think it's and a, this is more apocryphal a story. So my beer comes to us from Zachary Smith. He is a Des Moines desktop support analyst, and he brought us a beer from the Peace Tree Brewing Company.
Nice.
Called Blonde Fatale. It's a nice 8.5% brew. So I haven't tasted it. I've been saving it. I like the bottles, though.
It's like really pretty.
Old-fashioned, like soda pop bottles, kind of. Oh, that's good. That's quite tasty. Quite tasty. They also have an IPA for you, Paul. And
thank you.
A nice red beer called Rambler. Red nice. Rambler. Thank you, Zach, bringing that along. That's great. And thank you, Paul and Mary Jo, for bringing yourselves along.
Can we throw a few calendar items next week. In?
Yeah. Oh, dear. I was
yeah, okay. No, this is good.
No, it's good. Good news.
Okay. Yeah. What's the good news?
Next week, Windows Weekly, Paul and I will be in Manchester.
England?
In the UK. Yes, we will.
Wow, that's
but we're
exciting.
Doing Windows Weekly live from there with an audience, and the conference is stacked 2015.com, and we'll be there doing Windows Weekly live.
How fun.
And we'll be at our usual time. We'll just be doing it later. Yeah.
And what is Stacked all about?
It's a conference for Windows developers, a one-day free conference that our friend Gary Priddy has been organizing.
And it's not too late to get tickets, it looks like.
If you I wonder.
Go to Eventbrite.
They may be sold out.
I thought it was sold out.
Oh, yeah, wait list. Oh, wait list. Yep.
But well, the good news if is, you miss it. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that's okay.
I was going to say, if you miss it, Paul and I are also doing a Windows Weekly meetup in London on that Friday, November 20th, at the World's End pub in Camden. So you could come join us there. We'll be there.
What are the times for that? Do you remember?
5 to 8 is the time that we're going to be there for sure. And maybe later.
And this is apparently a legendary pub in Camden Town. So everybody should. And Camden Town itself is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
It should be fun.
Fun. That'll be.
And then there's another one.
There's more.
Right. So we are also going to be doing Windows Weekly live from the brand new Microsoft flagship store in New York City.
What?
I know. Yep. They
Microsoft
hooked
store
us up.
Says what?
We're going to be doing it on December 16th, and we're working out how to bring some live audience to that event. So we'll have some more details on that later, but it'll be also our usual time, 2 to 4, and we'll be in the Microsoft store broadcasting from the store, which will be cool.
Right. Well, they maybe do like a little tour of the store or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, and they're going to have all the camera gear and stuff, so we don't have to do anything?
They're going to work with Alex.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can mail you something.
I think they have some kind of ADSL connection, and it'll be fine.
I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
They have Wi-Fi.
So that's exciting. That's, again, December
16th.
The week before Christmas.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, I guess it is.
It's a week and a half, maybe, before.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, Leo.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Call of Duty night is the most
And I do think we're doing best ofs Christmas week, the following week. So you could take the 23rd off, of course.
Nice.
In fact, I invite people for any of our shows. Not all of them will do best ofs, but this one will. To go to twit.tv/best of. And if you can remember some great moments, like me with my head in Paul's lap. sorry, I shouldn't do that while you're drinking, Paul. You just go to twit.tv/best of. And
Leo, let me tell you something. I will never forget that moment.
It was a moment. We had a moment. don't be put off by the form. We ask you for a lot of information, but obviously you don't know the time code. Or if you do, put it in there. But if you don't know what time, and just as much information as you know, don't feel put off by. We're just trying to get everything out of you.
We need exact time codes.
Yeah, otherwise we're not going to do it.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Hey, that's exciting. We're having some fun stuff.
Yeah.
Next week and next month.
What about the week of Thanksgiving? Are we doing Windows Weekly the Wednesday before Thanksgiving?
Yeah, unless you really don't want to.
Thanksgiving Eve.
Thanksgiving Eve. Is that a national holiday?
I don't know. I'll be on a train. I know that.
But that might be kind of fun. Well, we'll figure that out. I mean, we were hoping to, yes.
Yeah.
We have advertisers who paid good money
to inject
their advertising into your content.
And no doubt.
So if we can, I'd like to. And we can move it around a little bit if you want. But however, we're going to do that. So you're going to take the train to St. Louis or wherever?
up to Rhode Island.
Oh, well, that's a short trip.
It is a short trip.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've taken that trip, actually.
I bet you have.
Are you going to take the Excella or are you going to take the slow boat?
I'll take the slow boat.
Excella is not that fast, to be honest, on that stretch
of
track.
Smoother,
it's not.
It's kind of rickety-crickety. So they can't get to the high-speed stuff. All right. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. Thurrott.com. Get Richard Campbell to make us a jingle or something. Mary Jo Foley's about all about Microsoft.com. And you'll find both of them every Wednesday. I'm sorry, Paul. He's like, his ears are... every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC at twit.tv. You can chat with us in the chat room while the show's going on. Ask questions there, that kind of thing, at irc.twit.tv. Otherwise, on-demand versions of the show always available. twit.tv/ww or use your favorite podcast client and just search for Windows Weekly. You'll find it wherever you go. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for the beer. And we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.